Mark contacted me this week to tell me about the very sad loss of one of the international Yes fan community, someone Mark has interviewed on the podcast in the past, and so I'll let him explain. We'll come back to Conspiracy by Billy Sherwood and Chris Squire in a moment.
Greetings, friends. This is Mark Anthony Kay, and I just wanted to take this time to mention the passing of Phil Narrow. For those of you who have been listening to the Yes Music podcast for a while now, remember that I did an interview with Phil on this podcast when we talked about his performance with the Yes tribute band Yes Songs. I saw them here in Brampton a couple of years back, and they were quite simply the best tribute band I'd ever seen. Period. These guys were absolutely spot on. Not only were their performances perfect or near perfect, they also dressed the part and looked like them. Their Rick Wakeman keyboard player individual looked exactly like Rick from 1973. He had the robe and the long blonde hair, everything, and a very similar setup. And Phil played the part of John Anderson absolutely perfectly. It's a shame that he's gone. I had a great time talking with him. What was even great was after the fact, he kept in contact with me and sent me a package a couple of times with some of his work that he had done with Druk Farben and some other bands. And he was really excited about getting back with Billy Sheehan in the band Talus, which I believe he was involved in back years back. Unfortunately, COVID put a stop to it, and then cancer put a stop to it permanently, unfortunately. So I just wanted to say, I'm thinking about you, Phil. I hope you're resting in peace now, and we got to do something about this cancer. It's taking far too many talented people and people that we consider friends away from us. Rest in peace, Phil. Greetings, YMP listeners. This is Mark Anthony Kay. This week I had the pleasure of doing an interview with the singer from a Toronto area Yes tribute called Yes Songs. Now you might be wondering why I'd do an interview with somebody from a tribute band. Well, this isn't some ordinary tribute band. When I noticed that the singer who was fronting this tribute band was Phil Narrow, I was instantly captivated and wanted to check it out for myself. Phil is a pretty well-known name, especially in Canada, and has worked with numerous artists such as Billy Sheehan, Lawrence Gowan, Kim Mitchell, Brian May, Julian Lennon, Peter Criss, Lou Gramm, Carmine Appice, Rudy Sarzo, and many, many others. And I've recorded with them and done lots of things. So needless to say, I was very interested. So I went out and I saw them last week. And to say that they put on a good show would be a mild understatement. I have to say that I've seen quite a few tribute bands, and I've seen Yes quite a few times too. And these guys were so close to the real thing, it was scary. So I thought it was only fitting that I sat down with Phil and talked about a bit of his history and a bit of the Yes Songs tribute act and what was going on and some of the mindset around it. And I wanted to share it with all of you on the YMP podcast. So sit back. And for the next 15 minutes or so, let's take a listen to the interview with me and Phil Narrow. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so let's just start with something simple from the I guess let's start at the beginning. When did you actually start playing guitar and singing?
Oh, I started when I was like 14 years old. I used to go see my uncle play in the band all the time. And I used to take me to his gigs. I was just a kid. I don't know, I was 10 years old, 11. And when I saw him playing, I was just going, I just got the fire in me to do that for the rest of my life. And I said, you know, that's what I wanted to do all my life, just be a musician. You know, I come home to my mom and dad, and my mom goes, so how was Uncle Sando's gig? I go, it was awesome, man. That's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I want to be a musician. And my mom's like freaking out, going, oh, I don't know. That's not a good idea. But eventually, you know, they started supporting me and everything. They knew I had the passion for it, and they supported me all this time. So that's how it all started. Yeah, it was fun.
That's great.
I picked up the guitar and started singing and playing high school bands, and it was great.
So just really quickly as well, you're originally from the U.S., right?
Yeah, I'm from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, and now you live in Toronto.
Yeah, I've been living in Canada for the last 25 years.
25 years. Great. I've been noticing on your website when I've been doing my research on this that you've done quite a lot of things throughout your career. I've noticed that you've worked with both Peter Criss and Mark St. John of, you know, Kiss fame. So that must have been something exciting when you were doing that.
Yeah, it was good. The Peter Criss thing was really good because I had a Toronto, a band in Toronto based here called 24K, and Eddie Kramer produced our first demo.
Oh yeah.
And Eddie liked the way I sang and everything, and then he introduced me to Peter, and that's when I hooked up with Peter. It was through Eddie Kramer.
Excellent.
And then the Mark St. John, that was the same way too, because Mark was in the band with Peter for a bit as the Keep. I don't know if you knew that at all about the Keep that Peter had.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So with us, and then I guess Mark. I don't know. Mark left and didn't work out, and then a couple of years later, like 2 or 3 years later, Mark called me up and goes, "Hey, I'm doing a solo record. Would you like to sing on it?" I sang on a solo record also, Mark St. John's.
Excellent. So let's get into a little bit of the Yes thing here, since I'm sure that the people on the podcast are going to really want to know about this. When did you get into Yes?
Oh, when I was in high school. A friend of mine introduced me to the band. I was like ninth grade, and he's carrying this album around school, and I'm looking at it. I go, "Wow, that's a cool cover." Which, yeah, the music's even cooler. And but yeah, so and then I went to his place and he spun it up and we put it on, and I was just hooked on the band. Like that Close to the Edge album, that was like religion for me, music religion. I'm just so into that album.
So what would you say is your favorite Yes album then?
It's Close to the Edge, and I like Relayer too, That's probably Relayer is my second favorite.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah. Great, isn't it?
No, I love it. It's such a masterpiece of progressive music. I mean, I don't think that there's, besides Close to the Edge, I think that's probably the closest thing to it that I think that's that perfect.
Yeah, Patrick Mraz, man, he brought a different flavor to the band too. He's quite a great player.
Oh yeah, he's fantastic. As far as the Yes songs show that you guys did, I'm really curious to find out who actually came up with the idea of putting this together.
There's Paul Bailey. He's the production manager guy who put it all together.
Okay.
Yeah, he put it all together. He'd been wanting to do it for a long time, and it was hard to find players that could, dedicate the time. Because it's not easy music to play.
Oh, no. Obviously not. I was going to say, that must have been, it took a while probably just even to find musicians capable of doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, he did his homework and, he went looking. Cause the three guys are from the States. The bass player, Chris, is from Rochester. And Matt and John are from Akron, Ohio. And then there's Mike Barrington, who's from Toronto, the drummer.
Yeah.
And then we had Marilyn on background vocals, Marlena, and myself. So we had three rehearsals, and everyone did their homework, We had three rehearsals, and we went out and played.
Yeah, the show was absolutely fantastic. I mean, honestly, it was one of those shows where I was so overwhelmed how good it was. I mean, I literally closed my eyes a few times, and I wouldn't have known the difference from listening to the actual Yes Show's album, and you guys were, it was like so spot on.
No, thanks. Yeah, we take it pretty seriously, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you a couple things. When you guys decided to do the Yes Show's concept, it was based around the live album, obviously, right? Now,
yes.
When you guys, first of all, are you guys planning to do more shows in the future together?
Absolutely.
And the other question I had is, are you going to continue doing that sort of set list, or in the future, will you guys maybe mix it up with bringing other songs from maybe other eras, like maybe from Going for the One or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's talk about doing stuff from Going for the One and even stuff from Relayer and, everybody knows all of it, so it's just, how it is. Like, everyone's got favorite songs they want to do, and then there's always, it's like, oh, yeah, I like this one. No, we should do this one. No, I'm not this one. So I guess what we're going to do is take our favorite songs, put it in a hat, and whatever falls down, whatever we pick, those are songs we're going to do.
Cool.
So I'm
guessing. So there's no argument.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm guessing, though, that you guys must have been very familiar with Yes music before this even started then, because, I mean, if you guys can get through those so many different songs, that you, there must be a familiarity within the group of the music.
Yeah, there is, because I played a lot of it, you know, after I finished high school, I did a little Yes thing, and but that never lasts long. Guys just couldn't dedicate the time. Maybe did one or two gigs, but it didn't last long. And then I joined a band here in Toronto called Drunk Farben. I don't know if you're familiar with Drunk Farben.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
When Drunk Farben started, we were, you know, we did the cover stuff. We did a bunch of Yes songs and Gentle Giant and Genesis and King Crimson. And that's how it all started, you know. And then, you know, I always wanted to be in a prog band.
When I checked out that your site for that band, I was really interested in that. I mean, did you guys made a release in for that band, didn't you?
Yeah, we did two releases, and we did a live DVD. I'm working on another one right now. Hopefully, we'll have it out by the end of the year.
Great. I'd like to talk to you about that on another occasion, just to get a little bit more detail on that if you have time sometime.
Yep, absolutely.
Great. Now back to the Yes Shows thing. Just a couple of questions I'm curious about. From the set list that you guys did from the Yes Songs one, what would you say is your favorite song from the set to do?
Oh, that's a hard one. I love Close to the Edge. I love that song.
Yeah.
That's my favorite for sure.
That's an awesome song. And you guys did it so well. I mean, having seen Yes and watched, you know, some of the recent DVDs that they've done of it, I mean, of course, you know, Yes are Yes, so they always perform it well. But I've noticed that through the years, they've kind of toned down the tempo on it a bit because, you know, they're getting up a little bit in age. So that's maybe to be expected. But you guys actually do the song at such a great tempo like they did in the old days, like with so much energy. I was really glad to hear it perform that way again.
Yeah, it's fun stuff to play, man. I was getting so high off it. It was great.
Yeah. So after asking you that question, and now the other end of the spectrum is, what do you think is the hardest song to do from that set?
Close to the Edge.
Yeah, so this, your favorite is also the hardest.
Yeah. You know, there's time signatures changing all the time, and, you know, it's just really well put together. You know, I call it smart music for smart people.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you, Phil, for your time, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. You take care.
Okay. See ya.
I took delivery at the weekend of a CD of Conspiracy. On Eagle Records, like a number of Yes releases from Talk to Magnification, as well as incidentally ARW's Live at the Apollo, it's a fairly standard package with minimal sleeve notes. As pointed out by Dem on the show notes for last week's episode, and I quote, it has 10 tracks listed on the cover, plus there are 3 hidden tracks, Wish I Knew, i.e. Open Your Eyes, Man in the Moon, and Say Goodbye, originally on Euphoria, I think. Thanks for that, Dem. Also on the show notes, Guy de Rome adds, the currently available streaming album has 12 tracks, including Comfortably Numb. There's also a Conspiracy live album on streaming, including versions of Hold Out Your Hand and Universal Garden. Interesting stuff. Thank you also to Guy. So I'm going to try and get as close to the original listening experience as possible by spinning the CD. First up is Days of Wonder. It has an ostinato keyboard part overlaid with some wordless chorus to begin, and then the unmistakable voice of Chris Squire appears. The feel is similar in vocal style to some of his solo album Fish Out of Water, but the music is much more straight-ahead rock-based. That's not to say it's necessarily less interesting, but just different. There's great Jay Shellen solid drumming and an engaging melodic shape. There are more than echoes of the Open Your Eyes approach, but some of the motifs in the backing vocals provide a lift to the otherwise quite heavy texture. It's attractive music and a strong opening to the album with enough contrast to keep it interesting. Once again, we are reminded what a great lead voice Chris Squire had, and perhaps the only surprise is the comparatively low-key bass line, which doesn't flit around the fretboard in quite the way we're used to from the master. Night in My Life is next. Mark T. Williams supplies the drums this time, and they are indeed a bit different. Squire's vocals are rather lower in pitch than the previous song in the verse, but more recognisable in the sing-along chorus. It's a mid-paced, ballad-esque song with a slightly quirky treatment in the chorus and an enjoyable Sherwood electric guitar solo. It rolls along without particularly catching fire, but it's a decent and sufficiently amusing song with more of a mobile bass line this time. The next song is described by Wikipedia like this. Conspiracy, it says, also included one track based on a set of jam sessions involving Squire, Steve Stevens and Michael Bland, called Violet Purple Rose, consisting of a recording from the sessions with overdubs from Sherwood. The opening is very highly reminiscent of Drama, and maybe Talk on speed, complete with bass lines, Hammond organ and powerful themes. Once this frenetic passage is complete, a more laid-back vocal melody appears, which then leads back to the speeded-up Drama-type vibe. It's adrenaline-fueled and fun, but maybe a bit too derivative. If you don't mind that self-referential aspect, then this song's a cracker, with a fabulous Squire bass line leading the way and plenty of contrast in vocal harmonic glory. Steve Stevens is clearly a guitar hero of note, and Michael Bland on drums also puts in a fine performance. It's fabulous, energetic stuff. With no rhyme, we're back to just three musicians, Squire, Sherwood and a bit of Jay Shellen, just credited with tom-toms for some reason. There's more than a hint of Arc of Life here, but topped off by Squire vocals. There's also a bit of The Solution from Open Your Eyes in the slow-moving but engrossing texture, which features acoustic guitar and phasing vocal harmonies, an effective contrast to the preceding song. Lonesome Trail begins with a repeated keyboard motif, followed by huge bass lead guitar and drums. A glance at the personnel risk reveals that this is Alan White on the drums, so it's no surprise that the rhythm section is tight and strong. It might take a little time and a few listens to get to grips with this song, I think. The melodies are not instantly catchy, but there is good variety in the movement between different sections. Robust vocals from Squire are a treat, and it's a toe-tapping number if a touch predictable. Some lovely bass solo moments keep the listener interested, and it rolls on in fine style featuring some sci-fi type keyboards at the end. It's just not the most diverting music so far for me. Next come the two songs with arguably the strongest Yes connections, at least so far. The More We Live, Let Go appeared on Union, and Love Conquers All was eventually included in the box set Yes Years, but was also originally intended as a song for Union. The More We Live, Let Go is instantly recognisable with washes of keys and a high vocal line. Sherwood leads the singing, and it's great to hear some classic Squire backing work. There's quite a bit of an 80s-influenced feel, especially in the keyboards at some points, and it's a brooding, slow-moving piece. Although pretty four-square in its approach, it shares a little of the poise of songs like Shoot High, Aim Low, if not the extra special production touches. It's still an enjoyable song and does finish in a different manner to the version on Union. Love Conquers All has Alan White on drums and Jimmy Horn providing a guitar solo. It sounds a lot like a Yes West song, and it's easy to imagine Trevor Rabin's vocals and electric guitar in the mix. Another slow-moving song, again with 80s keyboard sounds, it's difficult not to tap your foot to this one, clearly meant to be radio play-friendly in the manner of Love Will Find a Way. It works well, and Jimmy Horn's solo is excellent, even throwing in a smattering of interesting tonality. Big choruses combine with big drums, big keys, big bass tones, and presumably big hair, in a pleasant mix, if not necessarily a groundbreaking work of art. You're the Reason is next. Jay Shellen is back on drums, and this has a different feel to the previous few songs. It has an interesting driving rhythm, but the harmony backing vocals tie it into the main album aesthetic. Bass climbs and spirals in a pleasing way at times, and there's plenty going on in this song with phasing chorus and a catchy refrain. But his guitar solo owes a little to the highly treated Rabin 90125 sound, and adds an interesting contrast. The song rolls along and becomes more reminiscent of moments on Open Your Eyes as it goes, which is not necessarily a bad thing. A well-produced and rewarding song. Watching the World opens in laid-back style and continues in the same mode. Sherwood and Squire's voices blend well here with some creative harmonies. The two swap vocal roles at times, or so it seems, and the song stays with the same general feel. Keyboard keeps it anchored in the 1980s, and it's an engaging experience. A mellow trip with good interplay between solo electric guitar and solo bass at times. Well, ostensibly the last song on the album is Red Light Ahead. This is one of the most immediately accessible of the pieces here. It features a catchy vocal melody and a pleasing lilt, which fits the lyrics. A little bit of initial Steve Howe-influenced sliding guitar is joined by acoustic work later, and Squire's lead vocals are tender and affecting. There's nothing particularly surprising about this song, it just works really well, and is a strong end to the album, at least the album as described on its sleeve notes. So what are those enigmatic hidden songs? Well, on this CD there's an elongated 10th track, which suddenly bursts into something familiar, although in a rougher and perhaps slightly more energetic version, if only in some of its parts. It's an early version of Open Your Eyes called Wish I Knew, I think, and I rather like it. It's not as polished as the final version on the Yes album, but it's a lot more than simply a demo. Then Man in the Moon appears, a song which has received its fair share of criticism. It's pretty close to the Yes version, so I think there were parts added over the top in the Open Your Eyes reworking rather than starting from scratch. And why not? A great song, in my opinion. So, finally, I think, the World Trade song Say Goodbye is added. At more than 6 minutes, it's the second longest song on the album. It's not clear to me who's playing bass and who's singing on this song. It's clearly Sherwood and probably Squire, but in any case, it's a full sound and packed with shining production, big drum sound, and some moments of repose amid an insistent rhythm and melody augmented by heavy bass and electric guitar. A decent song. So overall, this album is for me like the Arc of Life disc in the sense that it took me several listens to absorb that new band's music, and I would have to do the same with Conspiracy, I think. There's plenty to enjoy, but in the end I find it rather like Open Your Eyes. I can listen to individual songs and really like them, but the whole album at a single sitting is very dense. That's fine, but I will certainly listen repeatedly in the expectation that I come to enjoy Conspiracy more and more.
Greetings, friends. So this week, Kevin and I are taking a further and deeper look into the album Conspiracy, which was the first release that Billy Sherwood did after he left Yes. Now, this album has a very strong connection to Yes, mainly because Chris Squire is the main person to be in this album with him. It is credited to both Chris Squire and Billy Sherwood, and it's very obvious that both of them had a very big hand in the songs on this record. There's all kinds of signature stuff from both people. Vocally, both of them are very evident on here. Instrumentation-wise, I mean, Chris Squire's bass playing, you can pick that out anywhere. Billy Sherwood's sort of writing style now in the 2021s is pretty obvious to pick up on, even on a record as far back as this one. He has these little traits that he does with his songwritings. So let's take a look at this album a little further. So this album came out in 2000. It was released on Eagle Rock in the UK, Inside Out, and Cleopatra in the United States. The members credited to be on this album are Chris Squire, Billy Sherwood, Jay Schellen, Jimmy Hahn, Alan White, even Steve Beccaro is listed here, and Michael Sherwood, his brother. Now, for me, I'll just say this about the album. I know that people had issue with Billy Sherwood and the amount of writing and influence he had on the Yes album, Open Your Eyes. In fact, many people say that that was just pretty much a Billy Sherwood solo record that Yes members sort of just jumped on and they turned into a Yes album. Well, one thing that I wish would have happened is if they would have kept Billy in a little bit longer or persuaded him to stay a little bit longer, and maybe they would have took these songs that they did, that Billy and Chris did together, and turned this into a Yes album, I think it would have been absolutely brilliant, because this album with just those two on there mainly is a really, really strong album. I mean, this is one of my favorite records, to be quite honest, from Billy Sherwood's output, mainly because I think I enjoy his singing with Chris that they do together on here. Chris Squire's bass playing will always make any album that much more better, in my opinion. And I think that Chris's presence on this album really helped Billy push himself a little bit more, you know, give himself that little extra kick in the butt to make these songs a little bit more stronger than he might have did on his own. Now, I'm not saying that he's not a good songwriter by himself, but sometimes having a songwriting partner can take what you do and just give it that little extra polish that it needs. And I definitely think that's the case on this album. The opening two songs, for example, Days of Wonder and Light in My Life, are quite possibly some of the most strongest material I've ever heard Billy Sherwood play on, and even Chris. I mean, Days of Wonder is really, really fantastic. The music on it, the vocals are extremely strong. The chorus in this song is very well done. Light in My Life is the same thing. I mean, I think that musically, these two work very well together. Songs like Violet Purple Rose, for example, have some elements in it that could even make you think back a little bit to Drama, that sort of strummed electric, which if you would have switched that over to like an acoustic guitar, would it give you like elements of like Machine Messiah in it, you know? So there's very much, yes, sprinklings in this, whether they wanted to or not. It's all over this record. Another great example of that is The More We Live. Now, we know that we've heard this already on the Union album. It was Billy Sherwood's contribution to that record, but we can clearly see here how much of that came from Billy Sherwood and Chris, because the version that's on this album is pretty much identical, except for the fact that obviously John Anderson is not singing on it. But what a great song. And then you have Love Conquers All, which was also on the Yes Years box set. Obviously, they thought enough of that song to put it on there, and they put this on the album as well. Like, overall, this album is just, to me, a display, or almost like if you were to go to somebody and say, what would be a good example of showing what these two people contributed to Yes, I would say put this album on. Listen to it from beginning to end, and then you'll know what they contributed to Yes. I mean, Chris Squire's bass playing is the main thing, and his vocals obviously are another strong factor in the Yes equation. And I know we're supposed to be talking about Billy Sherwood here, but on this album, you can't help but talk about Chris Squire, because he's very dominant on this record. Same with Billy. Billy does a lot of stuff on this, obviously. He did a lot of the guitar playing, the production of it, the songwriting, the mixing, you know, I mean, he's pretty much all over this. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the drumming was done by him. I mean, you also have Alan White on here, who did a few songs. So there again, you have another Yes connection. So this album to me is as near perfect a solo outing by Billy as I could possibly imagine. I mean, I really enjoy this record, and I have pretty much everything else he has released. I'll even go as far as to say this. When I take a good look at the credits here, you know, it says here Jay Schellen, Billy Sherwood, Jimmy Hahn. You know, these are all people that are involved with Yes, or the Yes family, even to this day. So I wouldn't be surprised if these people continue to show up later on, and maybe even under the Yes guise. You know, I mean, Jay's already playing drums for Alan. When will he become the permanent member of Yes? Could be soon. Jimmy Hahn's been appearing on a lot of different albums. Will he appear on a Yes album proper? Who knows? But again, I don't want to steer myself too far off course here. We're talking about Billy Sherwood here, and Billy Sherwood is obviously a very strong writer, strong producer, and it very much shows on this album. If you don't own Conspiracy, you really should pick it up, because if it's very much Yes-centric. And anyone who loves Yes music, or at least let's put it this way, anybody who likes Yes music from 1980 onward will love this stuff. So those are my thoughts on Conspiracy. I'm sure we'll talk about it in even more detail now with Kevin.
So Mark is here with me now to talk about Conspiracy. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Very good, actually. I'm in a very good mood. I've been sending off my records to America, and you're next to receive some records as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, fantastic. So, global superstar, as we know, your Project Gemini stuff. Very, very good. And incidentally, if you do get a copy of that, then have a look out for my name, because I've got a special job in this. Well, we won't say anything more about it, but yeah, have a look out for my name. Anyway, back to Conspiracy, Chris Squire and Billy Sherwood. And yeah, so I'm very interested in your comments, Mark. And those Billy Sherwood traits, they're as you say, they're always there, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all. But I was wondering what influence that will have on the new Yes album, because we did manage to get Billy to admit that he had written some things for this fabled new Yes album. But what sorts of things in Conspiracy do you think are very much Billy traits?
Well, just some of the overall tones that he uses as far as guitar sounds, and also the way he kind of structures his vocal harmonies and the way he does his vocals, that they're very much influenced by Yes, you can tell. I mean, I think that's why him and Chris harmonize so well, because, I mean, he's grown up with the band, listening to their music from a young age. So he loves that style of singing, and you can tell like how he does his, you know, his arrangement of the songs from album to album. it's evident, circa, you know, World Trade. He has these kind of approaches where he does his, you know, songwriting. Now, when he does the Prog Collective, he branches out a little bit more, which I really like, right? So hopefully he can maybe add some of this branching out into the Yes stuff, because I think that's what's been missing, like, especially on Heaven and Earth. I think there wasn't enough experimentation.
Yeah. It's interesting that, isn't it? Because certainly in Conspiracy and Open Your Eyes as well, although, of course, he wasn't necessarily doing the keyboard arrangements on Open Your Eyes, but his keyboards seem to be, certainly at this stage anyway, seem to be quite 80s influenced. And I don't know if that's the sounds that he uses or the approach he takes to it. Is that something you recognise?
Oh, definitely. I mean, those sounds that he uses are very much of those kind of grandiose pads and stuff like that. Like, he isn't, I find that him, when it comes to the keyboard playing, he's not very much in the same kind of style as like a Rick Wakeman, where he does a lot of Moog stuff. He's more like a, I guess you'd say, like a combination of like Jeff and maybe a little bit of like a, you know, a bit of a Tony K too, where it's a little bit, not, I wouldn't say simplistic, but he's more of like a space fill thing, right? That's why he always gets people like, you know, Rick and those guys and Patrick Mraz to come in to do these, you know, solo spots on those types of records, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair enough. He's clearly a decent keyboard player himself, but no, you wouldn't refer to Billy as particularly fond of breaking out the Moog solos and then any kind of keyboard solo, in fact. And that's one of the things we said about Arc of Life, I seem to remember, that keyboards aren't really to the fore in that album either. And it's not that I think that's missing, it's just a different way of doing it, I think. Now, I said about this record, and after listening to your comments about it, I went back and I listened to a couple of the songs that you talked about, particularly Days of Wonder, Light of My Life, Violet Purple Rose, for example. And second time round, or, you know, third or whatever it was, time round, I certainly found a lot more in them. And I was just wondering why some music seems to grab you immediately. Some music needs a few more listens before you get into it. And I don't think it's necessarily about the complexity of it, but... And that's that. As I said in my piece, that's definitely what's happened to me listening to Arc of Life, which I now really enjoy, actually. And I know the music very well now, and I look forward to the bits coming up that I remember and so on. But it did take some listens, and I think this is the same. And I'm just wondering why that is.
Well, I think, for example, songs like Days of Wonder, for example, are an instant catch for me. I mean, when I first heard that, it immediately grabbed me. And I'll tell you why. It's because the vocal melodies are strong. For me, I'm a melody guy. If a vocal melody is strong, or if there's like a really cool double lead guitar thing, and it doesn't have to be like, blah, 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 but if there's like a good melody in there that's harmonized, like, dang it. Like, this is one thing I've always noticed, that like in England, when you go see a band, and if they do like a double harmony thing like Iron Maiden does, the audience will always sing it. Oh, they'll always do it together in unison.
Right.
And that's when you know you have a really strong melodic guitar line, because if they can sing it with you while you play it, that's what I think is the strong bits in those songs. Like Days of Wonder has lots of kind of stuff like that that's memorable, those vocal lines. And those other songs, you know, that maybe aren't as catchy initially.
Yeah.
It's just maybe some of the parts are a bit more dense. There's a bit more instrumentation and not as much vocals maybe. But I think that the ones that stick out immediately are the ones that are vocally very strong.
Yes, I suppose that's it. You're able to catch on to that kind of thing. And certainly, you know, there are all sorts of albums that I've had to listen to many times and now just absolutely love. For example, the one I always give as an example is King Crimson's Lark's Tongues in Aspic. And I was just mesmerised, in a bad way, with that the first time I heard it, because I just couldn't follow the thing and couldn't get into it at all. But again, several listens later, you know, it's one of my favourite albums of all time. So sometimes it does take me a little time to get into it. But as I say, I mean, particularly listening to something like Violet Purple Rose, it's actually quite a remarkable piece of music, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I really like that one. The melodies are interesting on it. It may not be, like I said, it may not catch you immediately like Days of Wonder might, or Light in My Life will. Or for me, the big one that always catches me is The More We Live has always had a very strong vocal melody.
It's got a good hook,
Yeah, but then, of course, you have, you know, some very interesting guitar work with Steve Stevens on that song. Mm. So it's when you have those kind of little elements in there, maybe that you're not expecting. It's a difference of style because, you know, Steve Stevens is not exactly known as, like, you know, a big prog guitar player. You know, you don't sit there and say, yes, well, the big three guitar players, they're certainly Steve Howe, you know, Trevor Rabin and you know, Steve Stevens, definitely. You know, nobody says that, right? So
No, indeed. But yes, I do like that one very much. And it has got some really powerful rhythms and melody elements in it. And the other thing I was going to say about it was that actually I think I made a mistake listening to this the first time around because I listened to it on speakers in my room here. And again, when I put headphones on and listened more intently, I got a lot more of the detail. And that's, you know, it's an obvious thing to say, but I think I made a mistake. I should have listened really carefully through headphones first because there is a lot going on. And that's often another Billy trait, isn't it? He packs an awful lot into each song.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I always kind of tell people, recommend, that's the word I was looking for, recommend yeah. that people listen to some of these records on headphones, because a lot of the times what people do, and what I try to do with my own music, is give these people this sort of ear candy that you can get only by listening on headphones. Sure, you can hear it maybe if you put the stereo on like 7 or something really loud, and then maybe you might be able to pick it up. But when you're on headphones and you can relax and sit down, you know, you can do all these kind of interesting, you know, panning of, you know, the delay, ping-ponging the voice back and forth, making a guitar swirl, or, you know, taking reverb and placing a guitar way back in the mix, somewhere in the left corner. You can do all these kind of tricks with production and with, you know, effects and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's a shame when those kind of things are lost, because sometimes I've heard people say that once I put the headphones on and listened to this album, it was like listening to a totally new album.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly my experience. Absolutely. Absolutely right. And this is not, I mean, you would never describe this as progressive rock, this album, and that's not a problem either. You know, I didn't expect it to be Fish Out of Water 2, just in the same way as I didn't expect Thousand Hands Part 1 to be Part 2 of Elias the Sun Hiller. that's not the point, but there are those elements in it which very much are influenced by Yes, and I thought quite a strong Talk and Trevor Rabin influence on some of the guitar work, particularly from Billy Sherwood himself.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, he'll be the first one to admit it, that these records mean a great deal to him and they rub off on his writing. So is that a big surprise? No. Is it a big surprise that it's not a over-the-top prog album either? No, because like Chris Squire used to say, and like, you know, Billy says himself, he doesn't just only listen to that type of music. He has a vast listening palette, right? So, and it's really about, I find, vocals, this band. I mean, I think that because Chris and him are such good singers, that the emphasis was more on writing good songs melodically, vocally, and didn't worry so much about, you know, about let's make a fantastic 11-minute song with 17 parts in it. I don't think that was on their mind. I just thought that they wrote what came out, because I mean, Chris said in that video biography where he said that he would go over to Billy's house every day and they would just sit down, go into a studio and just write songs. There was no real structure in it saying, today we are writing an epic progressive rock ballad. You know what I mean? There was no rhyme or reason. What they did, just sat down, recorded stuff, and they had a vast amount of songs.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely true and clear from this. And of course, those three, in fact, I was surprised to see, I hadn't really worked it out, the hidden songs. So on my CD I've got here in front of me, there's no indication whatsoever on the sleeve notes or anywhere else that these three complete songs are hiding. So it's only mentions songs 1 to 10, and everything finishes with Red Light Ahead, which is, again, another good song, which I enjoyed very much. But then you've got Wish I Knew, which is actually Open Your Eyes. Man in the Moon, which is, I'm absolutely convinced that most of those parts made it onto the Yes record. And Say Goodbye, which was slightly less interesting to me, but obviously Wish I Knew and Man in the Moon were extremely interesting to hear those different versions of those songs that I know so well as Yes songs. And frankly, maybe it's because it's the two people that wrote those songs, I thought they were rather better, these versions, than on Open Your Eyes.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot, where you have that, you know, that demo-itis syndrome, where people write a song, record it, and then that first version of it that they put down, they can never equal again. And it's because it's very new, it's fresh, you're excited about the idea. So you go ahead and record it, and you're like, wow, you put everything into it, and then other people hear it. And then you have the record company guy with this, with the tie, who comes over and goes, oh, gentlemen, this Man in the Moon song is absolutely brilliant. How about you put it in the next Yes album? And then you're like, oh, he starts scratching your head going, how are we going to recreate that now? And that's what happens, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so I like the, I thought I'd never say it, but I do think I prefer the singing on Man in the Moon and Wish I Knew to John Anderson's. And perhaps that's just because they wrote it for themselves. They wrote it for their own voices. They wrote, you know, they were singing the thing while they wrote it, presumably. So Anderson taking over, yeah, it's great. But it did remind me how good actually Man in the Moon is. And that's a controversial thing to say, but again, if you listen to the arrangement and the production and the way it all fits together, that I think it's actually a really strong song.
Can this be the week that Kevin gets all the heat instead of me for saying such a huge monumental statement like that? No, but you know what? You're right, though, in all seriousness. You know, I think that because, you know, it was such a fresh song for them and they were excited about it, and they wrote it, like you said, they wrote it for themselves. They're in the studio working on music and this is what came out. And maybe John just doesn't have that same attachment to it as they do.
Yeah, yeah. And there will be songs that John Anderson's amazing, incomparable voice doesn't work as well as someone else. And that's the couple of occasions, perhaps, when Chris Squire sang lead vocals. Very, very few occasions.
Or Trevor. Yes.
Or Trevor, absolutely. And, you know, when the Trevor-John Anderson combination I loved. And also with this, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's about the vocals. A lot of this is about the vocals and the way that fits into the rest of the music. And these two together really blend beautifully and produce some great vocal harmonies, I think. So overall, I got a bit down towards the end of downhearted or something towards the end of listening to this for the first time, as I say, and that's when I wrote my comments. But on further listening, very much more enjoyable, I found it. And I think I'm right. Again, like Open Your Eyes, I can listen to any song of Open Your Eyes in isolation and really enjoy it. But listening to it from start to finish, I find difficult. Probably the same with this, but real highlights, Violet, Purple Rose, Days of Wonder, Light in My Life, and then Wish I Knew, Man in the Moon. So, you know, that's a serious amount of music, which I would go back to many times. And the other things, the More We Live and Love Conquers All. And when you've got through that, that's pretty much the whole album. So I think I am going to really enjoy listening and re-listening to this one. And it remains one of your favourites, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of those records where I honestly say it's like in my top five of stuff that Billy's done. And I can listen to this record beginning to end. And while you have your, you know, comments about it, the one comment that I'll put about this that makes me a little bit sad is not that I think that there's anything wrong with this album. The only thing that I find sad about listening to this is that you just realize that you don't have Chris Squire in the world anymore to write some fantastic music like he's done here. I mean, I love his singing voice. I love his bass playing. And, you know, I'm just happy that we have records like this to hear him do some other things besides Yes.
Absolutely. And I do want to have a listen to the live things that I know that they did as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just a shame that they couldn't keep going with Conspiracy, and it all ended after two records, I think, two studio records. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, well, let us know what your thoughts are on Conspiracy, the album, Conspiracy, the band, Billy Sherwood working with Chris Squire. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.